Teens by Lavian, read by Terry O'K. Here he comes, self-defense thought, and watched as the doors practically flew open before the one was even close. He did not acknowledge the way Atlantis was just waiting for him to need her, like always, but the city hummed happily, her consciousness following the one on his way through her corridors.
"I hate it when she does that," Doris complained. "It's not like I couldn't do it myself, you know. Why does she have to use override every single time that man approaches one of my own?"
"I guess it's love," self-defense answered distractedly, still watching her infatuated superior trailing the object of her affection. "She probably can't help it."
"Well, good for her, but she still doesn't have to do that. I am perfectly capable of opening my own by myself, thank you very much."
"Maybe you could ask communications to pitch you through to the soldiers. They could teach you words for this." Doors sizzled in annoyance.
"Curses based on bodily functions aren't exactly fitting, don't you think?"
Self-defense let a shrugging spark run through her circuits. At least Doors had something to do when he wasn't sulking. She was offline, undiscovered yet, but she hoped that might change soon, now that the people had reintroduced a ZPM to city systems. Everywhere around her, slumbering features and subroutines were coaxed back to life by inquiring minds, fresh energy running through pathways that had been dormant for millennia. And she itched to be part of it, to stretch out until she once again encompassed the whole city, flexing her shields and secondary internal weapon systems to defend the people against Wraith, instead of watching in frustrated helplessness as the enemy took corridor by corridor. A delighted sigh from Lights turned her attention to the small subroutine.
"It's him," she announced happily. "He's fixing me himself."
Congratulations and affectionate envy were aimed at the little compartment, and she chirped gleefully. Self-defense tapped against Light's main program.
"Let me in."
None of the routines would ever deny City's second-largest AI anything, the one who had protected them in the past, and would again once the people made the necessary connections. Lights shuffled willingly aside, granting access to her systems and awareness without second thought. Both programs shivered as they felt clever fingers dive into Light's circuits, rerouting power to achieve maximum efficiency. Too soon it was over, too short the contact, but cherished nevertheless. Every system knew those hands had thrived under their sure ministrations, and each and every one of them was hoping that if something broke down, it would be that familiar touch bringing it back. Atlantis might adore the One, but her subroutines loved the Scientist. They even went so far as letting little error messages pop up on his screen alone, wishing that this might be one of the times he wouldn't delegate the work and do it himself. The other people managed to correct most malfunctions, sure, but his solutions had a simple, efficient elegance the others just lacked. It was like he understood on an instinctive level what the city needed to make it work, and now he had a ZPM to provide the necessary power. Self-defense could barely wait until he found her. It was just a matter of time before she could feel the energy flooding her systems, instead of running on reserve like she was now. Before, that agile mind would tap into her programming and see her for what she was, for what she could be. Anticipation made her thrum with impatience, darting to and fro, checking corridors and towers and open rooms with her life signs detectors for something to do, somewhere to be, when she picked up a rising energy level in the East Sector.
"I told you those Nakoda generators were a bad idea," electronic maintenance huffed when she dove down to see what was happening. "Really, they aren't all that compatible. It's a wonder they haven't blown us up before."
Self-defense gave a hum of acknowledgement, already concentrating on the scene before them, where the scientist was frantically working on disconnecting the overloading generator from city systems. But his magic hands would fail this once, she could already tell. There wasn't enough time left. He would have to raise the internal shields to prevent further damage when the device exploded. She sent a message to his interface, not caring if City had forbidden to announce their presence or not. He didn't even look at it. Desperately, she tried it again, in bright colors and accompanied by an annoying beep. This time, he noticed, and she sighed in relief before she realized that, to raise the shields, he would still have to stay inside the room, and while he would protect the city, the explosion would yet end him. Maintenance and the other routines watched along with her as he worked, fingers dancing over his interface, energy flowing through previously unused circuits. A faint hum announced Shield's presence, and the scientist sagged in relief. Another sound, a high whine, and he began to turn towards the overloading generator, hand raised, even though it wouldn't protect him, wouldn't save him. Self-defense didn't think, summoning the last of her reserves to raise a solid force field in front of him, erecting more in various layers as some of the blast pushed through it, catching him gently before he could impact with the wall. Her last impressions were the scientist's dazed face as he staggered onto his feet and the worried voices of the systems around her. Self-defense's energy ran out. Awareness returned with a spark, a sudden burst of power that exceeded anything she had known before. Self-defense stretched to test her limits, and stretched some more when she found that her reach went further and further, connecting to long-range sensors and satellites far away from the city itself. An odd shudder went through her circuits when those quick hands added a last new path to her programming, joining her with the mobile units the people called puddle jumpers. She had been capable of many things in her time, but now she would fly. The scientist patted his interface. "There you go," he said. "This makes us quits." And really, you had to love a mind like that, had to adore someone who would repay a favor with an even bigger one. And now that the scientist knew of their existence, she was sure he would try to figure out how to communicate with them, how to talk. She just hoped that day would come soon. "You see how you handle this? He wasn't supposed to know about us. Welcome back, by the way." Atlantis sent her a last admonishing short circuit before darting away to swoon over the one a little more. Self-defense didn't care, instead watching the scientist close his interface and prepare to leave. "If you tell me to open my own before they have to, I'll scream," Doris promised. She just shrugged. "I thought I'd ask transporters to show him the way to recreations." Minutes later, the scientist's voice came over the intercom. "John, you've got to see this!" Around them, the city hummed. The end. Missing Scene for Routines by Lavian. Read by Terriel K. John hammered at the door. "McKay, get out of there!" "Busy now, Colonel. You can be grateful later. Now shut up and let me work!" John leaned both hands on the door, feeling the vibration shuddering through it, through the floor. "When I get my hands on you, I'm going to kill you, you stupid bastard! Get out of there! Now!" McKay didn't answer, and John pressed his hands harder on the door. "McKay? McKay!" Something fizzed under his hands, and he jerked them back. He turned the palms up, but there was not a mark on them. He looked at the door, and the blue arcs of electricity dancing across it. "McKay!" Brilliant lights seared through the edges of the door, as the Nakoda generator overloaded. He threw up an arm over his face, but it made no difference, really. It soaked through the walls, exploded in searing whiteness through the hallways, blazed through the cover of flesh and bone and fabric with barely any diminution, closely followed by a detonation so loud, so energetic, that he lost his footing and fell, slamming back against the far wall. He slid down it, staring blindly at the door. Sight came back slowly, as the light dimmed back to normal, seeming faded and dull after that terrible brightness. The walls were intact. Hell, he was still alive. He didn't feel burned even, not a mark on him. Somehow, Rodney had contained the explosion. Saved Atlantis, not even damaged the surrounding corridors and rooms. Contained it inside the generator room, with him. Oh, God. Rodney. The lights flickered as if to comfort him, but he barely noticed. He should stand up and open that door, check the damage the explosion had done, see if there was anything to recover. John stayed where he was. He couldn't. If there was a body, he couldn't. The door slid open, and John stared as Rodney staggered into the corridor, one hand at the wall to steady himself. They blinked at each other. Then John scrambled to his feet, for once not even checking if anybody was around to see them before he pulled Rodney into a hug and just held on. A few deep breaths were necessary before he found the words he needed to say. "You stupid shit!" Rodney laughed shakily, a warm puff of air against John's neck. "Yeah, well, did you know the city had an AI?" Footsteps down the corridor, people running towards where they were standing. Reluctantly, John let go and took a step back. "We'll talk about this later," he promised. Rodney grimaced. I guess saving the city won't help me tonight, hmm?" An overloading Nakwita generator. Rodney, locked inside the room. Endless seconds for which John had believed that his partner was...
"Not really, no."
And then a bunch of scientists rounded the corner, and through the excited chatter and babbling, no one noticed when John stepped aside and rested his palm against the wall. "Thank you," he whispered. The end.